You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I am Allison Twitter from MLB.com, and we are now in the time of the year where pitchers and catchers have reported, and the position players are either there or on their way, so all camps are getting ready to go. And of course, as we've been talking about most of this offseason, the Giants and the Dodgers are always the ones that are making the headlines or in the news. But of course, now we have the Padres, who seem to be healthy. They're loaded. They had quite an offseason, and they're doing some new and interesting things in their camp. So lots of optimism this time of year for all camps, but we'll probably be still talking about the Giants and the Dodgers and the Padres 6 months from now being very much in things. And I am joined by Ken Gernick, covers the Dodgers for MLB.com, and he is currently in Arizona with the team. And Ken, we have to start with Kenley Jansen. Sometimes in this sport, we tend to get a little bit caught up in how things affect the team in terms of wins and losses when it comes to an injury, but we also don't really think about the health issues that can come along with this. So Jansen actually received some very good news in that the growth on his left foot that had to be removed was nothing life-threatening. And that's a very good thing. And that's probably the first thing that everybody should be talking about at this point, and not so much that he's going to be out 2 to 3 months, but that it was benign.
Right. You know, the Dodgers kind of downplayed it. They didn't want to be alarmist about it. But when it showed up on the X-ray, they were worried. Everybody was worried. The MRI revealed that it was not what they first feared, and that it could be removed, and he'd be able to resume his career. And that's the way they're going. So while from a baseball standpoint, it's bad that he's going to miss 2 to 3 months. It could have been a lot worse. So he at least breathed a sigh of relief that it wasn't worse than it already is, and he's already in camp and he's beginning to work out. He had the cast taken off today, boots put on, and he'll start doing some throwing motions probably by the week so that he'll have less rehab to go through once he's finally able to put weight on that foot.
So when you say 2 to 3 months, I mean, is that including, like, there's probably going to be a minor league rehab assignment. Is that, like, the whole total thing as far as, like, when he come back, it would be actually being back on the Dodgers roster?
That's the way they described it to us.
Okay.
2 to 3 months, he'll be back on the team in games.
And so I know that, and I follow everything that you're writing every single day, and I haven't seen any updates on this. This is probably still the same, but the club feels that it'll look internally for a replacement. There's a couple guys that are still out there sort of floating around, and Francisco Rodriguez, Rafael Soriano. But the more likely scenario for the Dodgers is just to kind of try to bridge the gap while he's gone and look internally to what they already have?
Yeah, that's their plan right now. They've got a lot of arms. They have a lot of closers, but they have a lot of arms, and they continue to collect them. Earlier today, they confirmed the signing of Don McGowan, the free agent who was with Toronto, and was pitching better in relief than he did there starting the season in the rotation. So they've got quite a few contenders now for the back end of the bullpen. And again, none of them are really considered to be anywhere near Kenley Jansen's class as a closer. But a lot of them have high upside, is the way the Dodgers are describing it. Most of them throw hard. Gowan would be one of those. They got Juan Nicasio. Joel Peralta is going to probably be a seventh inning pitcher for them. They've got Pedro Baez coming back from last year, Brandon Lee coming back from last year. They went out and traded for Chris Hatcher. So they've got quite a few, and they even have a couple non-roster pitchers who have done closing in the past, Sergio Santos and David Ardsmith. So they feel they have enough, but I guess you really never have enough. So their goal is to try to patch things together until Ken comes back, and I guess if they find out that doesn't work, they always could go out and get somebody. But they feel that Jansen will be a short-term loss, and they don't want to lock into a full-year contract at a high salary for a proven closer if they're going to get him back by May.
Does it ever surprise you that so few times is a quote-unquote bullpen by committee, and I'm not talking so much in this scenario, but just like you've heard other teams over the years, very few, but some have tried it. We don't really have a specific closer, but, you know, bullpen by committee kind of thing. And you'd think that it wouldn't be that hard to get three outs, but there is something about the ninth inning that makes it where not that many guys can actually be successful in that role. Does that ever just surprise you that it seems to be that kind of like an arduous task to figure it out?
Well, I think it is surprising, but, you know, really you've got it from two different angles. You've got the player who might lose confidence when he gives up a game, and then you've got the manager who might lose confidence in the player when he gives up a game. So I think you kind of focus it in on one pitcher when you feel like confident you can give him the ball and you're going to come out with a win. And so I think from a managerial standpoint, it's a lot easier and a lot simpler just to have one guy do it. But there is a mentality about that ninth inning, even though it should be the same three outs as the sixth inning, it doesn't seem to be for a lot of the pitchers. A lot of them just aren't suited for that kind of pressure, and then the successful ones obviously are.
Zach Greinke has some interesting comments. I guess we know now that he will not be deciding whether to opt out of his contract until the end of the season, so that seems to be tabled for now. But very interesting, some of his comments that he made about, you know, you really can't trust front offices. They sign you, and then they trade you, and so you really have to watch your back. It's kind of been refreshing, kind of, you know, from a reporter standpoint to hear him be so candid. What did you think of his comments when he addressed all of that?
Well, I think within the context of the fact that he signed a long-term contract with Kansas City years back and was told that they intended to do certain things with the team, and then over the course of several years, their direction changed. And so what he was saying is the reason for the opt-out that he asked for in his contract, although it also provides a financial benefit to the player, can. But it also gives them flexibility that if for whatever reason the team gets off track, and, you know, you're talking about a team, the Dodgers, that was in bankruptcy a few years ago and definitely got off track, it gives the player the ability to change teams when he doesn't like what's happening with this team. Greinke was equally candid about the fact that it all benefits the player. Those opt-out clauses are not good in any way for the team, but they're good in several ways for the player, and he was honest about that too.
And regarding behind the plate, so there's two catchers that appear to be sort of headed for maybe equal time with Grandal, maybe getting a little bit more, but A.J. Ellis will not be the personal catcher for Clayton Kershaw. There's a lot that's made out of their friendship and their rapport, and obviously they have been together for very important games and have, you know, quite a close relationship. But they need a little bit more flexibility. Ellis is a better hitter against left-handed pitchers, Grandal against right-handed pitchers, so they really don't want to lock themselves into, like, personal catchers this year. And it seems like a pretty logical decision. What did you make of that?
Well, it sounds good right now. I would imagine if Kershaw has a couple bad starts throwing to Grandal, you'll suddenly see A.J. Ellis back there more often. They obviously have a good relationship, a rapport. They've been together for years and years, and all hasn't. I'm guessing, though, that Mattingly, and it's not, he's honest about it. He doesn't want to box himself into where he has to start a certain catcher regardless of who the opposing pitcher is, when it might be a really bad matchup. But I'm gonna guess that Ellis will probably catch Kershaw most of the time, and there'll be four other starting pitchers that Grandal can catch regularly. Grandal, being a switch hitter, probably will get more playing time than Ellis. You know, Ellis showed last year he was hurt. He didn't hit well at all until the playoffs, and then he hit real well. So, you know, maybe it was because he was hurt. So he's got a lot to prove. So if I'm guessing that he's going to up his game a little bit this year, and it may not be a 50-50 split, but you know, it could be 60-40. I don't think you're going to see Grandal catching 130 games.
No. And these are things that you can work out during spring training. So that's why it's, as long as it is, it gives a lot of answers to a lot of questions that may not be answered right now. But opening day is quite a bit away. So, Ken, thank you so much. And we will check in with you next week. I am here with my colleague, Chris Hatch, who covers the Giants for MLB.com. And, of course, as soon as spring training gets underway, the Giants have what seemed to be a brief scare with their skipper, that he had to go into hospital to get a couple stents in his heart. So I know he's now back with the team and everything's fine and he was in very good spirits. So I have to say, Chris, I was very impressed that he basically seemed to text back every single reporter who contacted him. from what I could see on Twitter, that was in the dozens of reporters that he was texting from his hospital bed. But how alarming was that when that first happened, and what was the whole process through that?
Allison, it was stunning. I mean, I think everybody who heard got the news was shocked. And, of course, the first thing, if anybody who knows Bruce Bochy, I think, you know, likes the man. And so you get the news, you're stunned, you're worried, and then you've got your job to do. So, yes, you're right. It was refreshing that Bruce called everybody back. It reflected, you know, what the kind of guy he is, but also, you know, the fact that after he put the stents in, he did feel better. Had a 90% blockage, I guess it was, in this one artery, which is really scary. I don't know why he has seemed so composed. Since leaving the hospital, I think I'd be a little more, you know, shaken up. Maybe that's something he's hiding, or you know, he's got plenty of time to be shaken up later. He's, you know, when he makes follow up visits to the physicians to you know, determine how best to you know, survive with this over the long run. But for now, yeah, everything is copacetic.
It's interesting when it's somebody who's in a public spotlight, when it's happening to them, it's like weird. Like if something happened to you or me, like we would go into the hospital and we wouldn't have to have 72 people contacting us for comment. You know, and that's just the strange thing about it. It's almost like it allows for that person to maybe not put it in the big picture context. Like he may not have time to have really sat down and said, oh my God, what just happened? Because it's not just like a heart issue that's happening to someone. It's a heart issue happening to a celebrity right as spring training gets started. And so there's just so much to deal with. It's almost like they're insulated from the real world when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah, that was interesting phenomenon. I'll tell the truth. I did not call him the night of the night he was hospitalized. I thought I'd, you know, be Mr. Respectful and all that and just leave him alone. But a couple of other writers did, and so the next day, I made sure to call him or text him, and yes, lo and behold, he texted right back. He even, you know, made a couple jokes. So, you know, his attitude is just phenomenal.
Yeah, he joked something about, I'm not going to get this totally right, but he was brokenhearted after being ranked 29th of the 30th managers in terms of handsomeness. So, yeah, I mean, he's always had a really good personality. And, you know, it's also interesting because, you know, a lot of people don't really understand, like, that these physicals that are taken at the beginning of spring training, they're everybody takes them. It's a requirement, and they are routine physicals. But not so much when it comes to players. When it comes to managers, there has been a lot discovered over time. If you think about the cases of prostate cancer that were discovered during these physicals with some of the managers, and this heart situation. I mean, it's sort of a reminder to the general public, like, go get a physical, because you never really know what's really going on.
You're so right. Go get a physical, you know, try to avoid stress, which I think is impossible in this day and age. It's all about handling the stress that you inevitably encounter. So, yeah, this is what happened to Bruce is a cautionary tale, so to speak, and it may remain so for a while. Again, I think we got to see what happens long term.
Yeah, well, thank God everything's okay with him, and he is back with the team. So we can go back to talking about the things that we have incessantly talked about and the things that everyone's talking about. And so, of course, that's Madison Bumgarner. And I'm guessing at this point, he's simply going to have to go through a full season of 200 innings pitch plus in order to get everyone to stop talking about the 270 innings that he pitched last year and wondering when his arm is going to fall off or blow up or whatever happens, you know, in people's minds when he puts so much when he puts so many innings on it on his arm. So do you feel like he's just going to have to go ahead and go through the season until people stop asking him about it?
I think you're right, Allison, and of course I think he's going. I think he's going to do so quite well. As I might have said before, he has that free, easy throwing motion that doesn't tax his arm, doesn't tax his body. Well, I'm sure it taxes his body some, but he's not one of those, not like a Nolan Ryan who grunts every time he releases a pitch, you know? So he gets maximum velocity out of minimum effort, which is, I guess that's something for a piece somebody in physics class to figure out. But I think that's also why he's not going to suffer from last year's 270 inning workload.
And the rotation is interesting because Bruce Bochy, he really didn't dance around it. I mean, he pretty much kind of named his rotation. And of course, that comes with some caveats. I mean, obviously, Tim Lincecum is going to have to show that he can be in the rotation, and Tim Hudson is going to have to show that he is healthy, and blah blah blah. But it really kind of feels it for pitchers like Ryan Vogelsong and Yasmer Puig that were kind of, this kind of year, usually managers say, well, we've got, eight or nine candidates for five starting jobs, and we'll make our decision as time goes on. But that's not really the case here. I mean, it's kind of here are the five, and the other two really know where they stand at this point.
Yeah, I think what Ryan Vogelsong and Yasmer Puig have to do is, certainly they're not hoping for a teammate to get injured, but they have to prepare as if they would begin the season as starters, because there's going to be a really good chance that one of those existing, one of the incumbent starters isn't going to make it, won't be ready by opening day. Chances are Matt Cain will be ready by opening day, and things are looking up for Tim Hudson a little bit, apparently, but still, there's that possibility that one of them won't be ready, and so they've got to do something.
So they're going to stretch them out in spring training as if they're going to be starters and then let the chips fall toward the end of spring?
Pretty much, yeah. But as you said, it will be, as of now, it will be not necessarily in this order. Bumgarner, of course, he is first. But the rest of the four I name, we don't know the order yet. Jake Peavy, Tim Hudson, Tim Lincecum, and Matt Cain. With Hudson, subject to, his injury, Cain and his. But Matt Cain has looked really good throwing off the mound in the bullpen. I think he definitely will be ready for opening day. I'm not so sure about Tim Hudson. And Tim Lincecum, his form looks great. So we'll have to see what he can do.
What's it like? I mean, when it comes to, of course, the fan base, they are very happy with, where the team is and going into spring training. What's it like for a reporter? Like, it's funny, I talked to other reporters that there's like all this kinds of, lots of news coming out. There's lots of position battles, lots of uncertainty, and the Rockies really like their offense and they just have to get their pitching going, and the Diamondbacks are sort of just trying to get everybody healthy again. But when it comes to like covering the Giants and going into spring training, and there's really not a lot of, there aren't a ton of question marks. So what's it like around camp right now? I don't want to say is it boring, because of course it's never boring, but for you, just covering the team, it seems like most stories are going to be feel good stories at this point.
Yeah, well, you're a guy like me, I think you're trying to find new ways to say old things. that these guys are really good. I'm right now, I'm in the middle of writing about a facet of Buster Posey's defense, which really hasn't been mentioned too much. So, stuff like that. You look for maybe the unusual. You hope for news to break out. Nothing like Bruce Bochy, the news that befell Bruce Bochy, but, it was news. Again, you're never hoping for anything like that. But, and then, gosh, with no position battles, it's you know, yeah, you're writing about the last guy in a bullpen or the last guy on a bench. So, you know, you try to take a big picture, maybe a big picture look, and, you know, with Matt Cain, you, for example, you write about what might lie in the future or how he's preparing for that future. And, you know, it's not, sometimes day to day, it's a little bit of a struggle, but, at the same time, there's, you know, these are mostly good, basically good guys with, you know, some decent stories to tell. So it's not brain surgery.
No, it certainly is not. And so, yeah, there's not really been any conversations about Posey moving positions these days. We really haven't heard that pop up. That's kind of died down a little bit, right?
Not yet. You know, and it all takes, though, is one little injury or one little incident or something in that, like that in the regular season to, you know, light that fire again. So, you know, that'll be an issue that never really leaves, I think.
Right. Well, we'll keep our eye on the Giants, but, you know, hopefully in another 5 weeks we'll have plenty to talk about. But good luck this spring, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you. As we bring in Corey Brock, who covers the Padres for MLB.com. And, Corey, this has been kind of a long time coming, and we've been talking about what may be expected when camp opens and sort of the hype around the team in the offseason. And now that the uniforms are on, just kind of tell us a little bit about what the atmosphere is like there. Are there a lot more media covering there? Or the, you know, how are the players doing? What is it, just business as usual? Is it any different from anything that you've experienced in Padres camp before? What's going on there?
Yeah, that's funny, Allison. It's kind of like D, all of the above. It's we've seen a little uptick in terms of the amount of media that's been through here in the first week or so. It's a little bit of business as usual. The guys coming and going, showing up and, you know, going through the physicals and position players showing up early. But generally, just a lot of excitement. I think a lot of guys are really itching to get started. You know, a lot of returning players have talked about kind of watching the off-season proceedings, I guess, with the new players being added and very excited to meet these guys and kind of get going. And, you know, the pitchers have been throwing off the mound a little bit and, you know, various drills on the field. We're still at the very early stages here, but, you know, you sense, you know, a whole lot of optimism. I guess across the landscape of baseball, you're going to get a lot of that anyway, regardless of the expectations, realistic or not. But I think here there's a little bit of a different vibe, a little bit of a different energy here. And, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with what took place during the off season. So, yeah, I think everyone's itching to get going here, and the position players show up tomorrow. And first full squad workout is on Wednesday, and then soon enough we'll be playing games.
It's funny because when you look at sort of the questions that every team faces going into spring training, you sort of list the big ones, and you always know when a team is expected to be good when the questions surrounding the team are who's going to be the fifth starter, who's going to hit third, who's going to hit fourth, would it be, you know, or vice versa. You know, one of the questions is North, who's going to be at quick steady behind the plate, just things like that. So you almost already, just by sort of looking at from that perspective, you're like, okay, this team is not, they don't seem to have a lot of holes right now, and they probably should be considered a contender at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, Allison. You're right. Yeah, the questions aren't quite as grave as maybe they have been in years past, where you go in and you're really trying to gnash your teeth and figure out exactly what your order is going to look like, what the, you know, who's going to fill out most of your rotation or your bullpen. I mean, things are pretty much static at this point. You know, they don't have a whole lot of spots they need to fill. Certainly, I think the group that's here is a group that's going to begin opening day. Yeah, as you mentioned, the fifth starter they need to settle on. You know, there's some stuff in terms of the lineup. You know, a lot of people will say, well, they don't have a true leadoff hitter. Well, I think as you look across baseball, most teams don't really have a true leadoff hitter. Those guys don't really exist anymore. That Ricky Henderson type, there aren't too many of those guys, or Vince Coleman, that true table setter. there aren't many of those guys anymore. So, you know, they'll get it all figured out. And the beauty about spring training is you have, you know, upwards of 30 games to kind of mix and match and figure out what you have, what you don't have, and sort of settle upon a lineup and something that you think that works. And I think Bud Black and his staff will have a pretty good idea when they break camp on April 2nd of what they want to carry into the regular season.
It's interesting because I didn't realize they hadn't, like, what you had written about the April record. So they haven't finished any April with a winning record in about 5 years. And since then, they've been a combined 40-66 in April and probably, you know, March 31st included in that, too. But this could be, you know, the spotlight's going to be kind of be on them. 17 games in April of their first 20 will be versus divisional opponents, so versus the NL West. So it's a little bit more crucial. It's a little bit more important to get off to a good start, I guess. And I'm also kind of wondering what you think about, you know, could this team sort of need a little bit more time to sort of gel together? There's so many different faces. You just kind of wonder if it, you know, they may have another slow start, but it may not be as alarming because things just, you know, sometimes they don't all just like click together at once and it takes a while to sort of get their stride.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think that's really, Allison, I think that's really hard to quantify. I don't think anyone really knows in terms of chemistry, like how long it's going to take these guys to kind of all these pieces really to fit together. But, you know, I think the one thing that Bud Black and his staff do a really good job of, you know, behind the closed doors is kind of engendering like a really good, you know, camaraderie, a good team spirit, and assimilating all the pieces together pretty quickly. And I think they understand the importance of that. And so I think they'll do a very good job of that during spring training, you know, kind of some team building exercises, things that we aren't necessarily privy to, and so kind of some fun ones. Like they'll send guys down to the rodeo and have them come back and, you know, put together a report on it and present it to the rest of the team. Kind of some fun stuff, some things that he learned from Mike Socha years ago. And I see Brad Ausmus now, Allison, is doing a lot of that stuff in Detroit. So I know he picked up on some of that stuff from Bud when Brad was here with the Padres. So, you know, there's certainly some ways that you can go about, you know, the team building and all that. So it'll be interesting. Yeah, that April has always been a thorn in the side for the Padres for whatever reason. Slow starters, some injury component there, underperformance, a lot of games against the NL West, certainly facing some very tough pitching, especially when you stack up, you know, Madison Bumgarner, Matt Cain, Clayton Kershaw, Ryu, you know, those guys in there. It makes for kind of a tricky proposition, and you look up on May 1st, and maybe you're 6 to 8 games out of first place, and that's kind of a daunting situation there, and they could ill afford that. Now, the season's not over on May 1st, but I think, you know, I think fans are kind of expecting a lot more this year, and I think the Padres are too.
Bud Black had an interesting comment about veterans maybe getting a little bit more playing time in spring training. It's always that sort of murky number that you're trying to hit. Like, you know, they want hitters to get maybe 50 to 60 at bats in the spring. They've got, of course, being in Arizona, the road games aren't as much of a thing as they are in Florida, where they really have to make sure that they're not overexerting anybody with the endless amount of bus trips that they have to take when they're in Florida. But at the same time, you want to get them ready, but you don't want to, you know, push them too much. But it sounds like they may be trying to maybe showcase some of these guys and maybe need some extra time to actually evaluate, since there are, you know, there is a crowded outfield, there's a little bit of a logjam there. Is that their sole reason, or do you think that maybe there might be something to just wanting all of these new guys to play together a little bit more than they normally would in a spring training?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it too, Allison, and maybe kind of the hit the ground running element too. And, you know, I think teams have kind of toyed with this over the years, like, you know, do we ease the starters into it a little more? Do we give them a lot of at-bats early, a lot late, play them more in the middle? And maybe there's no real rhyme or reason for it. I still think a lot of it's kind of individual based and, you know, kind of what works for each player. But I think, you know, I think the Padres are going to, you know, they have some things they need to get settled, especially they have a lot of outfielders on the roster, as we've talked about. Carlos Quinton, what's going to happen with him? Cameron Maben, who I talked to today, you know, he doesn't want to give up that center field job that, you know, they've talked about letting Will Myers have a first crack at. So, you know, Cameron Maben's healthy. You know, he's still a very athletic guy that can patrol center field very well. So, you know, he's going to get a chance to get a lot of at-bats as well. So what ends up happening is, you know, late in these spring training games where they bring these kids over from the minor league side, you know, number 87, no name on his back, those kids might end up getting squeezed a little bit, and the veterans may end up getting more at-bats. But, you know, ultimately I think it's going to help those guys and get them ready for the regular season.
You know, it's got to be nice to be Jane Shields. I mean, he, not only did he, you know, get to kind of see what was out there in free agency, see what he was worth, be able to sort of create his own destiny, even though I think he did overplay the market a little bit, but he's always going to contenders. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, sort of be able to, you know, test the free agent market. It's another thing to just never really have to play for a horrific team that has no chance. He's got to be feeling pretty good about himself at this point.
Yeah, and then to be this deep into his career and, you know, be 33 and end up playing for a team in your own backyard on, you know, what should end up probably being his last big deal. You know, that's no knock on him, but, you know, this is ends up being a pretty good situation for him with a team that's completely loaded up now, not just for this year, but for the for foreseeable future, and sort of building around him and a few other guys. I tell you what, he you talk about a dynamic personality and character. You've already seen a lot of that in the clubhouse, and he has been he's been exciting to watch. I mean, he's very fired up to be here. He's excited to be training in Arizona. And certainly, he was with the Royals as well, but he certainly likes the value of training in Arizona, being a California guy more so than Florida. No knock on Florida, certainly, but
you can knock Florida. Don't worry about it.
Okay, well, yeah, a lot of long drives there, but he likes it here, and you know, he's at a point in his career where, you know, he has a kind of a pedigree of winning, and he has a high expectation for himself, and I think for teams that he's been around, and you know, and he's coming into a situation now where he wants to, you know, be a part of a winner, and I think it's going to be something a lot of guys around him are going to be able to learn from in terms of watching him and his preparation. Now, not everybody's going to be able to say that, oh, look at, I can go out and throw 200 innings like James Shields, because I think he's, you know, he operates a little differently. I don't think they'd make these guys like this anymore, Allison, but at least I think they could see how this guy goes about preparing and how he works and his work ethic, and learn a lot from him.
Yeah, it's always fun this time of spring training because everyone's in a good mood, but I think the Padres probably have a little bit more reason to be in an even better mood. So, Corey, thank you so much, and enjoy your time out there, and we'll talk to you soon. I am joined by my colleague Thomas Harding, who is with the Rockies in Arizona, and he will be there all spring long covering the Rockies for MLB.com. So, Thomas, I love the fact that the Rockies, some of the Rockies have an issue with these new pace of game guidelines, and it makes me laugh just because the Rockies are, you know, sort of known as one of the teams that's making the league average for minutes that it takes to play a baseball game a little bit longer. but it just cracked me up. First of all, I love it. I love your line, several players who take baseball timelessness literally. I'm speaking of some of the hitters and the time that they're taking in between pitches, and this is very technological, or I should say technical, and Troy Tulowitzki, of course, is one of the biggest culprits, I guess we could call him. He's sort of the Nomar Garcia Parra ilk, where he's got a lot of habits and twitches, and he steps out, and he's doing his thing. And he's second in all of baseball, only to Hanley Ramirez, who takes the longest. So, I guess I'm not surprised that there are some Rockies who have some pretty strong opinions about this, and I should say that Tulowitzki declined to comment. But what did you make of all that when you're sort of breaking down the numbers and seeing exactly how much time these guys were taking?
Well, it's interesting because having covered the Rockies since 2000 at Coors Field, they could have some of the speediest hitters and pitchers, and the games would last a long time because those games are just totally crazy. It seems like every few games you have one where maybe there's a 6-run lead that isn't nearly enough, then all kind of hilarity happens before it's all over with. But I've watched Troy Tulowitzki take at bats for a long, long time, and they've taken a long, long time. And he's one of the slowest in baseball, but you also have Corey Dickerson, whose at bats last almost as long as Tulowitzki's. And I don't know, as far as the rule is concerned, frankly, for those two guys, I don't see it changing anything, because if you take a swing, then you can step out of the box. Now, they will be hurt along by the umpires after they step out. That's what happens, is those guys, they'll take a swing, then they'll walk around the dirt, they will adjust their gloves, and it's their way of getting the mind back for the next pitch. As Corey Dickerson told me, when he doesn't swing, he doesn't really need any more time. It's when he does swing that he has to review what the pitcher does and try to reset a strategy that way. So, yeah, you've got those two guys. You've also got Jorge De La Rosa, who often takes forever, and I really love talking to him about it, because when he talks about it, he says the problem isn't necessarily him, although he operates slowly. It's the hitters adjusting their batting gloves, and they take a long time. So here's one of the slowest pitchers in baseball who says it's the hitters who slow him down.
So basically, the hitters can still step out, but they're going to be sort of admonished by the umpire to move it along and get back in the box.
That's what I expect to happen. There was one aspect of my story that Justin Morneau, who actually has pretty quick at-bats, he pointed out that where there's going to be a problem is if a hitter doesn't agree with a call on a pitch. A lot of times that's when the hitter steps back and takes a little bit of time rather than staring down the umpire. Now, for the hitter to do that, he'd have to call time and be granted time. If that happens, then he's showing up the umpire and things get even worse. So that part of the rule, I think there's going to be some contention this year, because a guy, if he doesn't agree with a pitch, then he's going to feel like he needs to be able to step back and calm his own mind down before stepping in. So we'll see what happens. I don't think those rules quite get at the issues. I would like to see something done with the catchers constantly going out to the mound, or the stall game before, you know, the manager goes out to remove a pitcher, and also the fielders coming in, and Tulowitzki does that a lot. Derek Jeter, I think there were years that he spent more time on the mound than Mark Burley, who was a pitcher. You know, some of that, that's where I think that the rules could be modified to speed up the game more.
Yeah, and that's where it gets a little bit murky, though. I don't know, a little bit dangerous, is when you're kind of taking the strategy part about, you know, sometimes when a catcher goes out to talk to the pitcher, it's just sort of diffuse the situation and kind of put the momentum a little bit back in the pitcher's favor if things aren't going very well for him. And I think that's what baseball is sort of hesitant to do, is to really start messing with that side of the game, because then you can really change things and then really rankle all the players.
Yeah, well, I think the issue with the pitchers is when it's strategic. Like, for instance, you're changing signs because there is a runner at second base. You'd hate to have a guy crossed up. I brought this up to Justin Morneau, and his counter was, say it's in the middle of the regular season and you deny that timeout for the catcher to go out there, that's fine. What if it's the seventh game of the World Series and the catcher is expecting a slider and all of a sudden the fastball comes and hits him in the mask and the winning run scores? Then it gets a little bit crazy. So anything you do, this is the great thing about baseball, is I think it's the most perfect rule book in all of sports. It's not perfect, but it's closest to it. But the issue is anything you do to tweak it, you create a whole lot of other unintended consequences. And if they do it too much, then you end up like football, where you tweak the rule, then something bizarre happens in an important game, and you're tweaking it constantly.
Right, and you certainly don't want this to be what people are fighting about, and when when the contract is up and the union has to negotiate with Major League Baseball, you would hate to think that these are the things that are going to really create issues between the two sides. I mean, there's been so much harmony over time, but I don't think that they would let it get that far.
They wanted to get that far. I will say that Tony Clark and the Players Association did sign off on what's going on now, and there was some feedback from the players, I think, before and after the rule came out, and not every player is in agreement with it. But I will say this. I think that all players do believe that something needed to be done. It's just once you get into the specifics of how, that's where you have the disagreement.
And, of course, and I liked that a couple of guys touched on something that not a whole lot of people are talking about. But one of the issues with the games lasting so long is because there's so much more time in between innings for commercial time. And that is a very real thing. It's like 2 minutes and 25 seconds locally. It's 2:45 nationally. That isn't going away anytime soon. LaTroy Hawkins had an interesting suggestion, just to run ads on the side of a screen during the game. It cut down on the amount of commercial time in between innings. It's not really probably going to happen, but I do. It is an interesting idea to kick around.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if guys are taking somewhere around 30 seconds anyhow to take an at-bat, especially during Tulowitzki, you can run any number of commercials during his at-bats in between pitches. Soccer had this issue when it started coming on in the United States, and they ended up by making some money by having a company, you know, just basically sponsor a segment of the game. I remember at one time they ran some commercials really small on the screen, nobody liked that, but you know, what would happen if a company, say, wanted to buy the first inning and their logo was on the screen throughout the entire first inning and maybe they had a little 10-second spot in there. I mean, you see these flash advertisements on national games for shows that are upcoming. It seems there is a way to do this, but will that give you what those commercials during the 2:45 or whatever between innings gives you? That's a good question.
It could be even better because, I mean, quite frankly, when a commercial comes on, I'm doing something else. I'm usually not watching the commercial. So, you know, it might be better to just have someone's logo just sitting right on there on the TV while I'm actually watching the game.
Yeah, maybe. And you know, just 30 seconds, use Tide or whatever it is or whatever detergent on your laundry.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit of actual baseball. Cargo, he's making batting practice. So, you know, once you see some of the big guys start taking their swings and guys that were hurt last year, it's got to be nice just to get back to baseball as usual, especially some of the things that he's been through in the last year, some that are just conventional baseball injuries and some just wacky stuff that's happened in his life. But he looks like he's pretty content just being out there now.
Yes, in fact, today was the first day that Troy Tulowitzki also showed up, so they both took batting practice today. I tweeted out a number of different small videos on it. There'll be a story on the website here pretty soon. I mean, it's that time of year where everybody's together. There's a lot of happiness in that clubhouse. Now, when the reports come out, you know, Tulo is here and he's taking batting practice. Cargo is taking batting practice. There's that element on Twitter that's like, yeah, when are they going to be on the DL or whatever? You know, kind of the killjoy element. But really, I think for most baseball fans, just seeing them, you kind of have some hope for this team that maybe if they can stay healthy, then it's a different story than it has been the last few years.
Yeah, and I think I would have to say that, I mean, just looking at this from an outsider standpoint, and you hear the same things coming out of a lot of camps of a lot of teams that obviously are not considered contenders this year. And you know, they're finding the positives and they're maybe they're in a rebuilding mode or retooling mode. But the Rockies, I mean, you really have to look at them and say, you know, this might not just be a bunch of rhetoric. Like, this actually, you know, if you can have Humpty Dumpty put himself back together again a little bit, this team actually could be a pretty interesting one this year.
Yeah, definitely offensively. I think there was another media company, I can't remember who it was, who ranked the lineups in baseball and considered the Rockies the fourth best lineup in baseball. Also, I think the best infield. When you look at those things, and then you look at then you look at the records the last few years, it's obvious that they've been missing guys. If they're able to score the runs, we'll see what happens. I've seen this team do well when Cargo and Tulo have been healthy. The problem is it's been hard to find that year where they've both been healthy. If they are both healthy and the pitching is competent, I do believe that we'll be talking about one of the surprise teams in baseball, simply because you don't have to have dominating pitching when you play your home games at Coors Field. If you get somewhere near break-even on the road and you're able to dominate a Coors Field by scoring the runs, all you need is pitching to get you to the bullpen, and they do have some talented arms in the bullpen. So, I don't know. It's strange. What I like about baseball these days especially is that there aren't that many teams that are head and shoulders above the others. This is why we have so many surprises and why there's such competitive balance in the game right now. I mean, the Kansas City Royals were in the World Series last year. We're talking about a team that hadn't been in the playoffs in decades. So that's why there's so much enthusiasm this time of year even more so than any other sport, I believe.
Well, I'm keeping my eye on them for you, Thomas. So thank you so much. We will talk to you next week. Appreciate it. I am with my colleague, Steve Gilbert, who is coincidentally in Phoenix covering the Diamondbacks for MLB.com. And Steve, we've got Josh Colemanter and Jeremy Hillickson, who appear to be locked for the rotation. And then there's like 11 other guys that are competing for the remaining three spots. So well, I'm not going to ask you to run through every single name, but I am curious about something that people don't really talk about a whole lot, which is like B games, minor league starts. I mean, how do they find time and innings for all these guys that they really need to look at and evaluate? How do they go about that?
That's a great question, Allison, because, you know, when you have so many starting candidates, you have to get guys stretched out. They have to build up their innings. They have to build up their pitch count. And once starters start going more than two innings a game, three innings a game, all of a sudden you start to run out of innings. And so the Diamondbacks will probably have to schedule some B games. They'll probably have to schedule some simulated games if they end up going deeper into camp with a number of starting candidates more than, if they have trouble cutting that number down. I think one of the things that they're going to be very careful about is that, you know, some of these guys are their young prospects, and they want them to be stretched out for the regular season if they're heading to the minors, their minor league regular season. So at some point, earlier rather than later in camp, I think they're going to have to at least do the initial weeding out of some of those starting candidates to where we get down to a more manageable number where they can find innings and maybe go to B games and get some innings there.
I always thought it was funny because, I mean, my years as a beat writer, it's almost like it's kind of a bummer to get sent out to minor league camp and be among the first ones. But if you are among the first ones, it usually means that you're higher up on the depth chart in terms of the organization and the way it sees you. Because if they need you to go to minor league camp, it's because they need you to be able to be starting for the minor league teams, and they probably have bigger plans for you in the future, whereas some of the guys that sort of hang out until the very end are more guys that maybe need to catch the, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth innings of games or finish things out. But it's kind of interesting that it sort of works out that way.
Yeah, I mean, you look at guys like some of their top prospects, like an Archie Bradley or an Aaron Blair or a Braden Shipley. I mean, those guys, they're going to want those guys, unless they're lights out this spring early on, they're going to want those guys to get down and get regular work in the minor leagues and get comfortable down there because they have big plans in the future for those guys. And you're exactly right. If it's more of a veteran guy or a six-year free agent that they sign, whatever it might be, those guys they can kind of keep around a little later into the camp because, you know, they're okay if they don't get quite as many innings or quite as important situations.
Yeah, it's always like, you know, everyone's got these hushed tones, like when they make the first round cuts and they tell the media who they cut. Then you talk to the players and they're like, I knew I wasn't making the team. I need to go get ready for my season. So they're usually the ones that take it the best of anybody. But so you've got Randy Johnson there in camp. And I don't know. I found it interesting. Like, he seems to have re-embraced the organization. And there was sort of, a little bit, I guess it's not anything that's not unknown to people in Arizona, but I guess his time in Arizona didn't end so wonderfully. We're now 7 years removed from that. And he sort of stayed away a little bit from the organization. So how did he sort of re-ingratiate himself to the organization, and how's that going now?
Well, I think part of it is you've had a regime change or two in baseball operations since he was last there. Jeff Moran, who was a part of the ownership when they made the decision to let Randy go, win his 300th game with the Giants, is gone too. So there's been a clean break as far as some of those people that were involved in that decision. Plus, he's had a few years away from the game to focus on his photography and just kind of decompress after being away from his family for so long. So I think once he started to want to come back and get more involved in baseball, it just made sense that it would be the Diamondbacks, given the success that he had here, the fact that he still keeps a year-round home not far from their spring training facility. And I think, you know, Derek Hall, their team president, CEO, has done a nice job over the last several years, you know, kind of reaching out to Randy and, you know, keeping him in the loop. And, hey, you know, you're welcome to come out whenever. You know, no pressure. You don't have to, but, you know, we'd really like to see you. And I think, you know, listening to Randy talk, last week when he first came by camp. I mean, he's really anxious to, like, be around more often and not just with the major league guys, but he's more excited about talking with the minor league guys where he thinks he can have more of an impact. And he spoke to the team today, Monday morning. He addressed the entire pitcher and catcher crew. So he was out there again today. So I guess he's going to become more of a regular presence and actually travel around to some of their minor league affiliates throughout the year just to kind of check in on pitchers and see what he can do to kind of help them.
And it's got to be nice. I mean, you know, you can be one of the best at your position ever and obviously be a Hall of Famer and not be able to really relate to other players or might not be able to communicate very well. But Randy, I mean, he seems, from everything that I've been reading and you see pictures of him, he really seems pretty comfortable in this kind of role.
Well, I think, you know, his point is that he's been there before. Everybody now, you know, remembers him as being this great pitcher and winning 300 games and dominant and four straight Cy Young Awards. But early on in his career, he was a guy that people wondered, was he ever going to put it together? Yes, he had a great fastball, but his command was erratic. And so he really had to work to kind of not only harness his mechanics, but also the mental part of the game. And that's really what he wants to stress to these players is, hey, I've been where you've been, I've struggled, I've had success, I've seen all ends of the spectrum, and I'm not a mechanical guy, so I'm not going to work with you on your mechanics, but I can talk to you about how to approach pitching and how to approach the 4 days in between your starts and just the mental toughness that it takes to succeed in the big leagues. And so that's kind of where his focus is right now.
So let's talk a little bit behind the plate because, you know, it is my favorite topic when it comes to Arizona Diamondbacks. So we got a Rule 5 catcher, Oscar Hernandez. So he'd have to make the jump from Class A if he's going to make this team. I mean, he'd have to skip two levels, which is, you know, not a very easy thing to do. But with a Rule 5 guy, I mean, the rules are, for, I mean, most people know this, but if he makes the team, he has to stay on the major league level the entire year. And if he doesn't make the team, then he has to be offered back to his original team. So it's not like people, you know, it's not like teams just get together at the winter meetings and just throw something against the wall and say, well, you know, we'll try it if it doesn't work. I mean, they put a lot of thought into this. It's somebody that they really felt that it was worth taking a chance on. So where do you see him fitting into this whole thing at this point? Now that they have officially said that any of the eight catchers in Major League camp right now could make this team out of spring training.
And I know you loved it when they said that, that any of the eight had a realistic shot of making the team. But, Oscar, they believe that defensively he's ready to play in the switch right now. He's that good defensively. Offensively, he still needs work. And I think the question that's going to come that he'll need to answer as camp goes on is, does he show enough upside and enough improvement at the plate to where they think they could carry him as a backup and that he could at least, you know, be not necessarily a force off the bench, but just an automatic out off the bench. The Rays, the organization the Diamondbacks selected him from, almost certainly from what I understand, will take him back if the Diamondbacks don't keep him on the roster for the entire season. They have to offer him back. They can also offer to trade somebody else in exchange, and it doesn't sound like the Rays are going to be interested in either of those things. They want the player back. So, again, he's going to have to show not only defensively that he's as good as advertised, but that offensively he's got some potential there that they feel like he can kind of grow into. I saw him, you know, he's such a conscientious kid. Every day when he finishes catching bullpens, he pulls out a notebook and writes down who he caught, what pitches they throw, and what they're working on so that the next time he's more prepared for trying to help them along through their bullpen session.
It's got to be nice to see Paul Goldschmidt just talking about playing baseball, being out there, taking some swings. I know he's wearing this new hand pad, and it's not an unheard of thing to wear a little protection when you've had an injury such as he has had. This sort of reminded me a little bit of Jeff Bagwell many, many, many years ago when he broke his hand for, I think, the second or third time. His pad was stuck out. It was very gaudy. This one seems to sort of blend right into his glove. Does he feel pretty comfortable with that?
Yeah, he does. You know, he said that he probably doesn't need it, but that he would feel foolish in not wearing it when it's so unobtrusive and doesn't really affect him at all if he then were to get hit in the hand. And there was a possibility that pad could have helped him. So he's going to try and wear it. And again, he said in the last season he was hitting, so, you know, he technically could have probably played that last week of the season. They obviously weren't going to take any chances with him. He said he had a completely normal off season, no limitations, and in some ways he's forgotten that he even hurt the hand in the first place.
Well, good for him. Well, Steve, thank you. Enjoy your time out there, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.